Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ dhammaṃ saṅghaṃ namassāmi. For those with little dust in their eyes, we're here because we don't want to have dust in our eyes. Every day is new, and a new experience every moment. We had a lot of wind lately, but the more important wind to notice is the body wind, the heart wind, the winds in here. What are they like? I was walking from my kuti up through the snow, following a path that one of the bhikkhunis kindly cleared for me. But I could see her footprints and back and forth with the shovel. And then I was conscious of putting my own prints down. And then I had this memory when I was maybe 8 years old. And a friend of my mom and dad's, very kind, a lovely being. We were leaving a visit to him and his wife, and he looked down and he said, "You're bow-legged." And I was so surprised. I said, "What is that?" And he showed me, he says, "You walk like this, with your feet like that." And I remember feeling so bad. I felt like something is wrong with this. And it hit me really hard. I felt self-conscious. I remember that moment really well. And the funny thing is that 7 decades later, I'm looking at my prints in the snow and I don't want them to be bowed. Like, now keep them straight, don't be bowed. And I thought, well, what's that? What is that? It's a piece of self. It's a piece of not being right, or not being good enough, not fitting in somehow. And he wasn't being critical. He was kind, and they'd given us gifts. It was Christmas time. But the bow leg thing. So I remembered how many times I've walked to my kuti and back in the snow, and whenever I come back and see my bow prints, I try to walk on top of them, so that no one will see that I'm bow-legged. Where does that come from? What is this self-view that is so self-conscious that it does these ridiculous... It's a habit, a little game. Can I get the prints right on the old prints? But behind it, I saw deep, deep in the interstices of my heart, I felt that tinge, that nuance, which was like a rock. It wasn't a nuance anymore of a self. I don't want to be wrong. I, this selfness, is not selfless. It's the ego wanting to be liked, wanting not to get it wrong, scared of being hated, fear, afraid of being judged, not liked, not good enough. And something in here just bowed. Isn't that the heart of how we live, how we function, how we retract and cower in the face of other people's opinions? We have so much fear of what people will say, or how will they react? How do I look? Every time we look in a mirror, isn't it because we want to see, are there wrinkles? Is the hair gray? Do we look good enough? Is it nice? Is it not nice? What is it? Who is hating who? Who is afraid of what? What is there not to love in that moment? Why are we doing this? Why did that dagger of a calm, mild word from an adult weigh so heavily in the heart and stick itself in there for decades? Throughout the whole life, there's been that at the bottom of so much. There's been that sitting on my head, on my heart, on my approach to myself and others so much. Scared to be hated, to be not liked, scared not to be approved of. And you might think, well, I'm not scared. But we don't like it. We don't want to be judged. There might not be a fear, but there's a retraction, there's aversion. There's a wanting to do something to prevent that. Even if we think it isn't fear, but if we dig a little deeper, whenever we withdraw from something, we're not going towards it. If we don't go towards it, there's no love. Love has the power to defy fear, overcome it, vanquish it, tranquilize it, conquer it. And not in a way, you bad fear, that's no good. That's the same energy. But it's more of a knowing, that's not what we are. That's not what we truly are. So as soon as we stand up in fear, we're not knowing what we truly are. We're not coming close to what's behind, what is being occluded by, hidden behind the fear. Now, coming back to that moment when I was looking at the prince and remembering the child that heard the word that made her feel like a not good enough kid. Doesn't measure up somehow because you got crooked feet. And behind that, there's the child that loves and reaches for everything without judgment. But that's it. We want to kiss it. We want to... The child is like an unwritten slate. You know, the mind, it's just so fresh and doesn't know yet. So it tries. The first thing is, what does it taste like? What does it feel like? But the mind, what is our mental food? We want to be loved. And when we start feeling judged, we stop loving. This self crops up. This artificial sense of being somebody who needs to be approved of from the outside, when within us we have that love. So pure, so vast. We could love the whole world with that, and it would not diminish us a bit. In fact, it would make us more vast than the world, because love has that power to cover everything and to burn away all these obstacles, to scatter all the dust in the eyes, totally. And we blind ourselves when we start to believe in this self that has to live up to other people, other selves' ideas. It's all in the head. And if we want to get that love from outside of us, we'll never find it. It won't come. It might come in forms. I love you. I love the way you look. I love your being or your presence. But if we don't know the truth of what we are, how can we love anyone unconditionally? How can we? That's why we meditate. Because we have to discover the goodness within us. If we want it from somebody else, then we're wanting something selfishly. Not from a place of purity. It's still really good, but it can be tainted, it can be compromised by our wanting them to love us. But if we can truly love how we are, crooked legs, crooked teeth, hair falling out, gray and wrinkled, crippled, deaf, it doesn't matter. Whatever we are, whatever color, whatever sex, whatever age, whatever limbs we have or don't have, but we have that flame of truth within us that is love itself. And if we know that, I was talking about knowing. Knowing is keeping with the now. It's a K-N-O-W. To know is to be with that loving quality. That fire in here is luminous beyond our comprehension, but not the intellect. Conceptually, we can't know it. We can be brilliant. PhD? What's a PhD going to do for us when we're breathing our last breath? I remember being by the deathbed of a dear friend in England. She was a teacher, and she had two teenage kids. She had a very serious cancer. She was trying to live long enough for them to graduate so that they would be strong enough without her. Finally, they graduated, and she was dying. And I said to her, you did it, you did it. No one thought she could live that long, and she did it for her children. Power of a mother's love. I said, can I have a picture of you? I want to put it on my shrine. And she gave me this big, beautiful picture of her. And I said, don't you want this? And she said, I don't need that where I'm going. I realized this woman is really let go. She looked really lovely in the photo, but of course, she's dying. What's she going to do with the picture? We are so attached to our photographs. How many photos do you got? To our PhDs, to our certificates of honor, our awards, our medals, our plaques, our trophies, our beautiful clothing, our shoes, our dressing up outfits, to look good, to get approval, to be loved. We're always buying love. But we don't need to buy that. We are that. That's totally what we are if we stop long enough and go deeply enough into the heart and pry open all those hidden dark places where we were so shut down out of fear of not being good enough. Behind all that is that ocean of love. It's bigger than an ocean. So if we can love from that place, then fear has no leg to stand on. It has nowhere to perch. Like the birds that try to come into this room, they fly into the window and they die or fall down crippled. They can't fly. Sometimes we're able to get them back and going. But if we run into that self, that concept of who we are, I'm a nun, but I'd like to say I'm nothing. None, isn't that a good name? N-O-N-E? None. Zero. To be a nothing is to not identify with anything that we want to be, but just to know what we truly are by emptying the mind of greed, of ill will, of fear, even a little fear, like afraid to have crooked legs. What's that? It's no big deal. But my footprints. What is our moral footprint in this world? The measure of our love is our virtue. Because when the mind is truly pure, when we are purified when we have no fear, when we have no ill will, when we have no retracting from someone. That's kind of a judging mind. Oh, I don't like that. I don't like them. Even an opinion against, for or against, too much to one and not enough to the other. The Buddha was like the sun. He loved everyone, even the people that tried to disgrace him. He did not shy away from them. He sat and spoke to them if they were willing to listen. He would sit there and try to teach them the Dhamma. He had unconditional compassion. But we only want to hang out with people that we like. Of course, then the Buddha encouraged us to have spiritual friends and not to hang around with people that don't protect virtue. Why? Because it's like a fire, a destructive fire. If we stick around people that harm, then they might harm us, even with their mental effluent, with what comes out of their mouth, because we will be hurt by that, burnt by that, not supported on the path. And until we realize Nibbana, we need spiritual friendship. We don't want to risk being burnt in that way. And if we do, we need to have a very secure footing in this practice so that we don't get blown away by the worldly winds. It's so easy to be influenced by the ways of the world. Look what happens. You go into a shopping center and then you pass a window and you see something you like. Wow, just the kind I wanted. We think we're there and we're not. That's why I live in a monastery. You're the brave ones. But I have to say, you try staying here. I made a vow. I made a lifetime vow. And it's just so powerful. When you commit to something, it holds you in place because you love the truth so much. You don't want to bargain with the truth. You want no compromise, total commitment. So we make a vow. It's like a marriage. You make a vow. Fortunately, the Buddha doesn't break his promises. Because this is true. This is a true path. It's not a worldly way. It's beyond this world. And the vows that we make, marriage vows, are very precious. And if we do keep them, and the person that we've made them with keeps their vows, then there's a mutual protection. Then we can be spiritual friends to each other and support the highest in each other. But if we cannot do that, then maybe we've made a vow to the wrong thing. We have to use virtue as our yardstick for what we commit to and how well we can support the best in us through what we commit to. Unconditional love, unconditional compassion, unconditional rejoicing in the happiness of others, which are the basis for having the equanimity that brings Nibbana into the heart. So I was reading a poem by a great Christian mystic, Anthony DeMillo, and it was in the early days of his life. He was an Indian priest, but he became a devout meditator and knower of truth. And he was reflecting on how looking at the statue or the photograph of an image of what Jesus might have looked like. And he felt that Jesus loved him unconditionally, that he could never return that look that he felt from the face of what he thought is the Christ, and then within himself, looking at Jesus, the thought of Jesus, the thought of that love, he realized that he wanted to look at everyone with that kind of love. How skillful a religious teaching can be if it teaches us to love, to be the witness that can love others with that same kind of love as the love of God or Godness or an enlightened being. A love that can save us from this belief that we are somebody who can make the world love me. No, we have to find that love within us and radiate that love to everyone. And that is the realization of truth right there. So it's not to get the Christ, but to be the Christ, to be that love. So more and more I see that every teaching has this same teaching in it, every true teaching. But then over centuries, we have a facsimile, and it comes distorted, reformed, revised. It's a poor version in many cases. But if we get down to the bare witness of what we are moment by moment with the eyes of unconditional love, we will discover that Jesus, that Buddha, that Mohammed, that enlightened, whoever, whatever awakening we want to call it, we will know that Godness here. And that's what it is. To love each other so that we're not afraid to love. Because behind it all is still that fear, not good enough. Of course we are. We're so good. What we carry is so precious. So let us not judge anyone, lest we be judged. It's so true, because there's a self judging everything. And that self has got a blindfold over our humanity, our virtuous eyes that desperately want to see the truth. And we want the truth to pervade through every ounce of our being. And when it does, we wake up to that. Let us wake up before the body gives up. And the beauty of nature is to know our true nature, is to see how we are not this body. Look, it falls apart. It's just falling apart. Can't stand up, can't sit down, can't hear, can't eat. Who are you anyway? Love, pure and unconditional love, never gets wrinkled, never gets deaf, never is disabled, never is wrong, never is what we think we are, but it is what we are. Love is the witness, not the thinking mind. This is the story of the limbless man on the bridge. 50 years ago, I was in India crossing a bridge to the Ganges River, and I came to this stump. It was a human being rested on a stump with a head and a torso and no limbs. And he had the biggest smile on his face. And I was terrified that I didn't know what to do with that. I just felt, how can I smile in the face of something that's so horrifying? So then I passed by and went to the Ganges, and then on the way back, I have to pass him again. He had the most beautiful smile. His smile was contagious. He was the happiest man in the world. And I realized that my thinking mind was creating this separation from my experience of the truth of his joy, that we are not the body. If there's no limbs, you can still experience that unconditional love. But if you feel guilty, then even if you have all your limbs, you're in a worse condition than the guy with no limbs. What's that? So what is the mind, what is the deluded mind doing to us when we cannot bear witness to the love within us. It doesn't depend on the state of the body. But if that man had a knife in his hand and he was cutting off a limb of someone else, then you could despise his action and not despise the being. To be able to see that there is in that being maybe a karmic seed that someday will realize the poor choice of deed that he has done. Therefore, we wish well-being for that person so they wake up to the horror of what they're doing, but have compassion and love, feeling the goodness and the fortune of your own karmic predicament, which can carry this loving quality even in the face of the most terrible conditions in a life, and to see that those are not the conditions that destroy the goodness within us, but our poor choice of action, our poor choice of mental state. And we can be the witness over what is arising and ceasing in the mind if we displace the hateful feeling and fill that space with metta and compassion. That's why we practice loving kindness and compassion to ourselves first, because we have to purify enough to be able to practice this loving compassion towards others, even in such terrifying condition. So when I was walking in the snow and I saw the footprint and I saw the judgment about the bow legs come up, the mind went to judging. Where is the love? I hate the bow legs. Right here in the present moment, I could see how I was giving vent to some hidden little droplet of hate or dislike coming from self-view, which is wrong view. Even one toe of a self is going to blind us to the beauty within us, to the freedom of that unconditional love and unconditional compassion. Forgive. Forgive the karmic predicament of so many people, people that are being bombed to death, people who are starving because of political conditions, people who are being tortured, kidnapped, abused by their parents, abused by strangers. So many conditions of suffering in this world, we can feel gratitude for what we do have here and now. Metta, karuna, mudita, upeka. The four boundless qualities shine forth. Kindness now would sum it all up. To know this lovingness, this kindness now. Not to expect kindness from the world, but to bring it up within our own hearts, because it's there if we just know the now, the witness of what we truly are, then kindness just comes out. What else do we want? Just that is enough.